Hi, welcome everyone, and welcome to the next in our series of New Horizons events that we're doing in association with our podcast, Without Borders. I'm Brendan Craigie. I'm the managing partner of Taito. And, you know, bit of context for those of you who have not joined any of these events before. We, you know, saw the opportunity to really, you know, while we're all stuck at home and probably sort of really craving the opportunity to sort of get our heads together and compare ideas and, you know, and thinking around what's going on in the world, that, you know, never before has it been more important to come together as leaders and as communicators. And I'm joined with my colleague, Flick Hazelhurst.
Hello. Hi, everyone. And thank you so much for joining live this afternoon. Just a quick note to say that we will be making this and all of the episodes in this New Horizons series available on our website to listen to at a later date. You can find them at taitopr.com, but they're in association with our Without Borders podcast. So you can also find them by searching for Without Borders on all of your favourite podcast platforms. So please share that far and wide and check us out.
Brilliant. And then, so now we turn to our guest today, which is Stephen Kelly, who, when we were kind of coming up with the idea of putting on this series of events a few weeks back, Stephen was kind of like top of the list of people that we wanted to invite. And the reason for that is that he's led, you know, three successful turnarounds, helping companies to sort of grow more than 10 billion in value. He's weathered multiple recessions. He's been the COO of the UK government. He's invested in 20 different startups. So when we're thinking about the times that we're living in and the challenges that we're encountering, having someone with sort of Stephen's experience and, you know, to be able to kind of get around the table and sort of hear your opinions on things was something that we were particularly excited about. So welcome, Stephen.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Brendan and Flick. Thank you very much. Thanks everybody for joining.
So I was, one of the things that we were thinking about, Stephen, as we were coming into this kind of period where there's a lot of discussion around the economy going into recession, is that a lot of us probably work with people that have never been through a recession before. So you know, as someone who has kind of navigated these challenging situations before, what should we expect?
Yeah, I think obviously on the news feed, everybody says it's unprecedented times, and it is. But obviously at the macro level, you know, I'm not stargazing. The next series of events economically is going to be that there's going to be a reduction in consumption. There's going to be a recession. There's probably going to be a doubling of unemployment in the next 90 days. And when I look back, every recession I've lived through has been different, and the triggers around it's different. Obviously, this is a pandemic, which hasn't happened in my lifetime before. But it seems, I think the Chinese numbers on their economy contracted up by almost 7% this morning. The expectation, you know, OBR, there'll be lots of news flow, I guess, which will be horror stories. And that always happens in recessions. So there's a very negative sort of sensationalist air cover. Now, what can you do if you're an entrepreneur? You kind of have to kind of buckle down. But I remember, you know, back in 2000, 2001, when we had the dot-com crash. And I was based in California at the time. I was driving down from San Francisco back to the home office down in Palo Alto. And literally, it was kind of seismic, the change, because a year before, it was booming. You couldn't get space. Rents were crazy. You couldn't hire people. Everybody actually wanted stock compensation and equity and would be happy to forego all their salary. And then you're driving down the 101 freeway, and literally on either side, what we call these see-through offices, where the rate of unemployment in California was like 2% before the dot-com crash, and it went up to 11% in 9 months. And it was just seismic, the level. Corruption, the lack of consumption, demand collapsing around the world. Now, I think there's a couple of things with Corona. Obviously, we're going to have a recession, a big dip in the UK in Q2. And then everybody's using this acronym, LUG. Will it be an L?
Yeah.
Will it be a kind of slow glide path along the bottom, bumping along the bottom? Or will it be a U, where we kind of go down and over time we come back? Or will it be a V, where we have a steep Q2 and then a bounce back? Again, I don't know. I can't predict the future. I'm kind of an optimistic Meg. But I would be surprised if there's another 1 million, 2 million unemployed. You know, I think the US unemployment just shot through the roof again this morning. Mm. To have that consumption disappearing from the marketplace, it's going to take a bit longer for people to regain their confidence. And a lot of it's driven by sentiment. Mm. So it's going to take a while. So I think on this podcast, you can ask your questions like, what can we do practically to help business people, entrepreneurs? Because you are fundamental to us coming out of this recession and being stronger in your own businesses. And there's certain things that you can do where you can use the recession, despite it being brutal in many respects, to emerge stronger for your own business. So, you know, kind of it is a roller coaster ride. Hang on, fasten your seatbelts. But at the end of the day, good businesses actually get stronger through recessions. So there is some optimism.
Because I'm just thinking about, I think with these kind of things, there's obviously a very dark cloud over the economy. And I think you then naturally sort of, you know, end up sort of yourself becoming quite, potentially becoming quite negative. But when you look at back at those periods that you've come through when there was a recession, do you look at back on those as being like really horrible times, or do you look at those going but look back on those as being exciting times? You know, is it all doom and gloom?
No, I think probably a lot of the folks who joined today will be inherently optimists. There'll be a lot of entrepreneurs. I think, Brendan, there's a lot of elements where we can use recession. I think some of the biggest innovations we've seen, you know, just back to a great company, Microsoft, started in 1985, right in the midst of the oil crisis in the US, massive unemployment. Then, you know, who could have guessed it? Mark Benioff at Salesforce has built a $140 billion company right in the heart of the dot-com crash, and called his company Salesforce.com. And he was sailing into a headwind of the customer relationship management market, which had been decimated. So he defied the cynics and the critics then. And then you've had innovation with Steve Jobs with the iPhone in 2007 in the financial crash. And just thinking about one of the experiences I had personally was when I went into the government as chief operating officer. One of the things that was a catalyst for innovation was the deficit reduction program. Mm. So what we wanted to do was improve citizen services, but at the fraction of the cost of the rhetoric of the last sort of 70 years of more public spending equals better public services. And that led to the invention of something called GovUK, which, you know, is loved and I think widely used today now. And it stopped all the car tax disc and all the paperwork and all the bureaucracy. Obviously, still a long way to go. But a lot of innovation has come out of recessions, and a lot of the best product innovations likewise. And I think we would call on entrepreneurs to be that voice of balance, but to balance the negativity with a spirit of optimism and positivity. I think the other thing, you know, everybody's saying in the news flow that Corona kind of treats everybody equally. Well, the economic consequences of Corona won't treat everybody equally, and it's going to be very sad for some of the regional economies in the UK and some of the folks who are going to be laid off inevitably. They'll probably be some of the poorer folks in the economy. So I think, you know, it might trigger, given the massive government investment to try and shore up the economy, a sort of different way of thinking as we go forward, which we might come on to.
Yeah. And so I think I'm totally in an agreement that there's, I mean, one of the things I really love is in the creative industries, we talk about how creativity loves constraint. That, you know, like when you're actually operating under constraint, it forces you to be more creative, more innovative. And I think that kind of the same thing applies in business. But before we can get to that, it sounds from like following a lot of things that you've been saying, that going into this recession, that you kind of do as a business need to strap in, take some proactive measures to kind of prepare for that. What sort of things should like business leaders be thinking of?
Yeah, I think, and I've blogged quite a lot on this, both on LinkedIn and Twitter. Basically, the rule number one is you've got to act early. You can't afford to be an ostrich and put your head in the sand. And actually the people around you, your customers and your employees will expect you to provide that leadership, the beacon of light. Not again, prophesizing about the future, future, but taking rapid action to make sure that you kind of batten the hatches down and survive, and then emerge stronger when the crisis subsides. You know, one of the things I always say is typically for businesses, growth cures most evils. But what we need businesses to do now is make sure they right-size themselves. Cash preservation is key. And kind of another sort of trite phrase, but it's kind of don't delay till tomorrow what can be done today. So the essence of the blogs I've kind of written is, number one, all your previous plans you put together for 2020 are completely redundant now. Do a reset plan with the exception, there's a few exceptions. So if you're Zoom, you're Peloton, you're Amazon, you're hiring hundreds of thousands of people, there are some outliers out there where the crisis has meant that actually what would have happened in a decade in the death of the high street is probably happening in 3 months. So the natural evolution of going online and having digital experiences with companies and consumers has rapidly accelerated because of this crisis. But if you're not one of those companies and you've seen any kind of sensitivity to your top line, your revenues, your cash flow, then you do need to hunker down now and do a reset plan and obviously attack fixed costs as much as you can. Obvious things, and I've put in the blog about renegotiating rents because landlords are going to struggle in this environment. But also if you need to look at your variable costs, take advantage of the government support, but also look at how you go about a restructuring with compassion to make sure you stabilize a sort of sustainable worst case revenue, but also get to cash break even and search out for pockets of growth as well. Now, I think interestingly, and no one's kind of talked about this, is CEOs and chief executives and leadership teams who do very well in growth economies need a sort of pivot now and have almost like a different mindset and a skill set to actually become a lot more analytical, have a different set of skills and different decision making to really look at every decision, like what's the cost impact of that? What's the cash impact? And what's the marginal revenue associated with every decision you make? And inevitably what it means for folks that are on this podcast around chief executives, you'll probably be making fewer bets, but the bets you make have to pay off and you have to make bets for the long term, but also survive the short term. So there's an important point that you tend to find very few chief executives who need to reinvent themselves in times of strife as they do now and go deep in their skill set to get really forensic, almost like accounting skills to look at investments very clinically, dispassionately, but then make the right decisions, then deal with the communication with great compassion.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Sorry, Brendan. I was just going to say that's interesting because one of the things that I was going to ask you about is what good and bad leadership looks like at this time. I'm sure there's a way to lead your team really strongly through this time, but also perhaps some less successful ways. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Flick. And I think maybe I didn't articulate it well enough, but it's such a different mindset being a growth chief executive and laying off big bets around new products, new geographies, expansion to where we are now. And it is a massive challenge to pivot, but I would, you know, say it's a compelling action you need to take as a chief executive to do that as a leader. And I think in these sort of times, Flick, I think to directly answer your question, in times of crisis, everybody around you, and if you look at all the trust barometers, actually people across the UK probably look to their business leader, their chief executive, as the primary source of the truth. I think the data is about 82% of them believe what their CEOs say. And in the face of human tragedy all around us, where, you know, the reality is, I think every family that I talk to will know someone directly affected by this, either on frontline key workers or someone who's experienced the tragedy of a death. So what that means for chief executives in that context, I think, is to be very unselfish, very, very much searching out, number one, what's best for the business, what's best for their customers, what's best for their employees and all key stakeholders, but also expanding their role as a leader to be looking at the great greater good. And I've used the word of compassion, consideration, putting the stakeholders first, and then also very much in your field, Taito, to be just the best communicator you can be, best chief executive you can be. The communication is almost as important as the actions you take. So, I've seen loads of brilliant stuff. The joy of these terrible times is it brings out the best and worst in people. Yeah. You know, obviously, sort of the villains of the piece early on was people like Tim Martin of Wetherspoons and Philip Green. But then you see heroes, like today I read about Dun Elm, the chief executive, Nick Wilkinson, taking a 90% pay cut. The massive donations chief executives are making to NHS charities. People like Ernst Young, MetLife, putting up programs to help small businesses with advice. So there's loads of amazing things, which is way beyond. And I even like Jacinta yesterday down in New Zealand, the Prime Minister saying, I'll take a 20% pay cut. I think these really connect people, because I do think there's a whole, you know, on Twitter, it's all trending all the time. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
And I really think everybody, the Joe public, look for the leaders to be genuinely in the trenches.
Yeah. Do you think that's
holding hands?
Do you think that's a new thing, Stephen, in terms of, like, in previous recessions, have leaders acted in this same way, you know, in terms of taking pay cuts, etc., and kind of like that being such a public thing?
Well, ironically, in the dot-com crash, I was chief executive of a NASDAQ company then, Cordian, and we took three, and sadly, you know, it's all the things we did that I'd advise everybody not to do. The worst thing you can do with restructuring is almost salami slicing. So every year, then everybody expects we're doing more restructuring.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do that without sucking the oxygen out of a business. However, there is a bit of you never know what you don't know. So if the outturn, you've got to plan with the sort of worst cases we expect it now. Now, what I would say is back then, a lot of chief executives and me, we took initially a 30% pay cut, just as the message of we had to let some of our employees go. You know, a lot of these people were friends. We knew their families. And it is very personal for a chief executive, a leader, and no one wants to stand up there at the town hall meeting and say, we've let 100 of our friends leave the company. Now we're going to do it really well and professionally. We're going to give them outplacement services. We're going to be very compassionate, and we're going to be very fair in terms of redundancy and all those things. But no one likes doing that. And I think it does galvanize the whole community of employees much more powerfully if the chief executive says, and by the way, all executives are taking a pay cut, because, you know, we are in this together and we are very sincere about this. We believe in the future, believe we've got a great company, we've hired the best talent, but, you know, we've got to feel the pain as well, and that's why we're taking a pay cut. So we did that, and the executives, you know, truthfully probably weren't too enamored with it, but they got their heads around it. And when they saw the power of the impact on the communications with employees, then it was very compelling. But I think to your point, Brendan, now, this is a human tragedy and it's come from left field. And I think there is that sense that for the next 90 days, we are definitely in uncharted waters. And therefore, the people at the top should share the pain. I think that's a fantastic message. And I think that will bring people together.
Yeah.
And how about people who aren't necessarily the CEOs or sitting in the C-suite who are taking those decisions, but are nonetheless leaders to other people in the company? So most people are somebody's line manager or somebody's mentor and are kind of seen by a leader by the rest of the company. How can those people make sure that they're providing good leadership and finding the leaders in themselves at this time, do you think?
Yeah, Flick, that's a great question. I've probably talked too much about the leader. But in these times, in all times, everybody's a leader. Everybody has to be the best leader they can be. Because, you know, I think all this working from home, invariably, sadly, you see domestic violence increase, domestic abuse. You probably see escalation in mental health issues. What that means is, and it's totally unrealistic to expect one person to be, you know, the beacon of light and the savior. We need the middle management, every individual, the individual contributor, the consultants out in the field who are now working from home, to really show leadership. And that comes through their values and their behaviors primarily. But what it means, and I've been blown away. I've seen so much community activity within companies. You know, I'm on the board of a couple of companies. Mm. And within those companies, they're doing bake-offs, they're doing quizzes, they're doing buddy schemes where they're reaching out to each other, checking in.
Mm.
And I think the chief executive sets the tone at the top. So one of the things I, in week one of the crisis, suggested to CEOs is they should reach out to their customers and their colleagues, their employees, and just put a call into them if they can do, and say, you know, how are you? And just check in. What's it like? Mm. You're going to have to be confined at home, and just make sure we connect on a human level. So I think, you know, Flick, it's so important for, you know, to create an army of volunteers to support within your company each other. Mm. And that could come in very different shapes and sizes of Peloton competitions, you know, quizzes, fun things, but also look out for the vulnerable, because you know, I'm lucky. We talked before about having gardens and stuff. You know, if I was living in Peckham, which I love, and I kind of lived near there growing up, but if I was in a 12th floor flat without a balcony or a garden with young kids running around, expected to do Zoom calls with colleagues, you've got
story.
To think of being very sensitive to different people's work environments now, and reach out and support them, because I think everybody needs to feel that there's that safety net for employees and customers and all stakeholders.
I think that's a very important and good point. Just changing direction a little bit, Stephen. So obviously I think that in times like this, as a business, you trying to manage your costs and you're really focusing on that, but you probably still want to make new sales.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, like, you can only get so far by managing your costs. Thinking about, like, in an environment like this, I know a few things you've written about are like when you're like restructuring or relooking at sales, not top slicing. You've talked a lot about focusing on sales to existing customers and organic sales. I just wondered, you know, like, in an environment like this where sometimes it might feel like no one's buying, how do you approach sales in this kind of environment?
Yeah, I think, you know, you, in reality, any business, you can't cut your way out of a situation. And, you know, the reality is it's much easier intellectually to cut costs than it is to grow revenue. But it is a time where you can grow revenues. And obviously, you know, I've seen loads of examples of restaurants kind of shutting their physical premises down and going online, running delivery services, running services for key workers. So there's been some brilliant innovation, and it's kind of, particularly I think in the UK, the spirit of entrepreneurship, where people genuinely will think about how do we actually create new revenue sources. And where every business is very different. You know, a yoga business used to run physical yoga classes. Now it's all gone online. That's pretty easy. But if you're in a business, ultimately you've got to look at, does it make sense to stay open, but maybe use a new channel of going direct, going through the internet, and serving your customers that way? Or if you're not covering your variable costs, then what you might have to think about is sort of mothballing the business for the 90 days or the period of lockdown until that's relaxed. But I think, you know, reality is what it makes sense is there's always ways kind of that you can stay close to your customers. So obviously you can kind of Zoom them, email, social media, pick up the phone to them. And I haven't been through previous recessions, always found that our best friends are always our customers. And by reaching out and mobilizing your company to reach out proactively to your customers and ask them in this new reality, what are their needs? And then go back, you know, and turn on a dime, this adaptability, this innovation, where you may come up with new products and services for customers in Corona times. And they may lead to greater revenues for the future. So there's a lot of things, depending on your business, and every business will be unique, where you can creatively think about what can we do, and the best way to do it is go and ask your customers because they'll give you all the answers.
Yeah.
And ask your colleagues, your employees as well for suggestions. But what can you do to make sure that you not only kind of protect your revenues in your new reset plan, but also potentially grow pockets of revenues? And again, I blogged on this, so lots of ideas. I used a restaurant example with probably a dozen different ideas, what you can do in sort of Corona times to actually grow sources of revenue, because I think it is important. And I think that gives you, you know, I guess philosophically, what you want to do is set your reset plan against the worst case and then go about hunting for sources of revenues with the innovation adaptability that I've talked about. And then that creates a bit of upside and contingency if things get worse as well.
I like the point about being, you know, really close to your customers. And I think in these challenging times where you're all in it together, the thing I'm really loving actually is just working even more closely with my clients and kind of like really being in the trenches, really seeing how it's affecting their businesses and trying to sort of help navigate through that. And it's actually really, it's much more challenging. And as a consequence, it's actually much more rewarding to be, you know, working with your customers in this kind of environment.
Yeah, I think the other thing, it is a unique time, and customers, maybe, you know, I just think with unique times, it's an opportunity. So if you're authentic and sincere, it would do no harm to actually pick up the phone to your customers, because the reality is everybody's working from home on Zoom calls or whatever. They can always make time for you and just check in with them and say, you know, how are you?
Totally.
And if, you know, I don't know if they live near, if you're a small business and they live nearby you, is there anything you can do for their elderly relatives?
Yeah.
You know, if you do those things, those customers will never forget you. When we emerge from this crisis, that loyalty and the authenticity of you offering to help and being more than just a supplier will, you know, reap much benefit for the future, and they'll give you lots of business. So, but it's the right thing to do. I think that everybody is kind of polarized by doing the right thing. And you as leaders can take advantage of that opportunity and your customers and reach out to them. And at the end of the day, you know, your customers are your best friends. So you'd want to check in with your best friends and see how they are and see if there's anything you can help them and support them with. So it's important to do that.
Thinking of another subject, Stephen, which I'm sure you've been kind of like, I know you've been following closely, is just interested to get your perspective on the government's response in relation to businesses and employees, and, you know, how, what's been your opinion of what's been done, and do you have any thoughts, you know, on anything else that should be done?
Yeah. And obviously, when I was chief operating officer of the government up to, you know, the end of 2014, you know, I was at the heart of seeing how things move around government. And, you know, I think what I would say is the civil servants I work with are absolutely fantastic. And we've got a lot of brilliant civil servants at the top and throughout the organization. Overall, I think most of us in the UK, and I share this, have been hugely impressed with the speed, the firepower that's been thrown at the problem, and the proactive support, which is unparalleled. And also, it's not a political statement, but you probably wouldn't have expected a Conservative government to come in and give billions in terms of loans, grants, furloughing, and support for employees, for charities, you know, for the whole community. Now, invariably, there will be some businesses that fall between the cracks. Again, I'll be quite impressed. There's high growth businesses that sort of fell between the cracks on the first set of grants and loans that were announced. And then Rishi, the Chancellor, has come forward and said some new initiatives to kind of plug those gaps. So I think I would say probably two things. One is, yeah, I've generally been very impressed with the proactive economic support that the government have offered business. And they certainly, and we all hope this is kind of a short-term problem, like a 90-day issue, and then businesses pick up as we come out of this probably quick, deep recession. But what I'd also say, just having sort of done on crisis management. The golden rule is you always hit the emergency cord absolutely as early as you can. And I think probably people would acknowledge that most governments in the West, when they saw what happened in China, it seemed very, very remote. And it kind of didn't seem like it was going to happen here. And then obviously Northern Italy kicked in, and maybe that's became a rude awakening, but we still probably could have acted quicker. So a golden, golden rule of all these crises, you know, and sad as pandemics or cyber, whatever it is hit that emergency as early as you can, almost overreact. Because if you overreact and you overreact early and the crisis doesn't materialize, you know, ultimately fewer people will die.
I want to pick up on
but now we are where we are, and you know, everybody's hands to the pump. And they're doing everything they can, I think.
I'm just want to pick up on a few of the questions that have come into us as we've been live now. One of them is just to get your perspective on how do you, you know, like at times like this, we've probably all had a few sucker punches where something you just wouldn't have expected has happened. Maybe you've got a customer or something who is a very important part of your business and you have a great relationship, but hey, you know, maybe they're in the travel sector and as a consequence, they've been very badly affected. How do you personally deal with really bad news that kind of comes out from the blue? How have you, as a CEO, as a, you know, as a leader, how do you deal with those just kind of like really big blows that you get sometimes unexpected?
And Brenda, the reality is, I just think you always have to be authentic. And invariably, you do get sucker punches. Now, I'll give you an example. And this is back in the dot-com crash. One of the biggest credit card providers across the US was one of our key customers. And they basically kind of said their business is really cratering and they're basically putting all suppliers on hold with a view. And they were in the middle of being acquired as well. And the probability, they said, is that we would lose them as a customer. So, and it was one of our biggest customers. So everybody knew about it in the company. I remember coming back from out in Wilmington and then flew back to California. And I had to walk through the development floor to get to a meeting. Everybody on the development floor was asking me kind of how'd it go, you know. And I said, look, we're going to have a company meeting later on this afternoon. So it's just best to hold off till then. I'll tell you how it is then. And at the company meeting, I just stood up and said, you know, I just told the news as it was. You know, it is what it is. But then I think people initially are shocked. This was like probably a 10% customer of ours. So really big customer, important. And it was one of these things during this period where I used to stand up and tell them, look, at the moment as a CEO, number one, we're sort of public enemy number ones because all the stuff about CEOs being written Number two, from a personal point of view, it does feel like going in the ring with Mike Tyson. Again, it'd be Tyson Fury. Is the modern day analogy would be, it's like going in the ring. I said Mike Tyson, but now it's Tyson Fury. Going in the ring with Tyson Fury, getting battered and getting knocked out, but just having to dig yourself off the canvas, get up again, because that's what it was like. So, however, then you've got to pivot again and say, however, we've got a great business, we've provided fantastic value to our customers, we've taken the actions that we think we need to do to get through this crisis, and we believe we'll emerge stronger. And normality, you know, I think the key thing with all of this, leaders need to provide that sense of balance, because I think if you kind of watch the news flow, there is nothing apart from corona news. The second phase of this will be the devastating economic impact of the coronavirus. But it is absolutely mainstream. You know, all the climate change has gone out the window. All the big issues that we're facing have completely stopped being talked about on the broadcast channels. As a chief executive, as a leader, your role is to acknowledge that there are sucker punches. You know, life at the moment is not a bed of roses.
Yes.
And it's tough. And I think if you acknowledge that this is tough, you know, some days are really bad. Some days it is like kind of being in the ring of tires. However, what you built is something that's compelling and valued the customer. And the other thing I used to do is tell customer stories. So, you know, even in these darkest days, I'd pick up the phone, talk to our Canadian customers, and I'll tell the stories of our customers and the value and the importance of us as a company to them that was shared with all the employees. So I think the important thing is you just got to be straightforward.
Yes.
You've got to be a straight shooter. You never want to sugarcoat stuff.
No.
But you've got to be the spirit of the future and the spirit of optimism that people will invariably in times of crisis galvanize around.
No, I like that. I like that balance between being really honest and direct around things and not kind of sitting on that bad news, which only kind of like breeds suspicion and worry. And then at the same time, you know, painting a picture of the fact that, you know, we will get through this. I think that that's really important. And then another question we've got here was, there's a lot of talk about the focus of businesses on conserving cash, but what beyond that, like, is there anything that businesses should be doing to be in a position to grow again when the crisis is over? I know that you mentioned this point about making bets, and it sounds like rather than making like multiple bets, kind of like really trying to figure out which of the bets you're going to make. Is that a fair?
Process? Yeah, I think so. And I think the natural inclination for a leader, and this is definitely the wrong thing to do, is do this sort of top slicing. Yeah, I think it's fair. A lot of companies I'm involved in, you know, employees, because at the end of the day, we're all sitting at home and we're spending way less money than we were 3 months ago. Movies, we're not getting Ubers, you know, we're not going to restaurants. So therefore, I think it's reasonable during this period of 90 days, and many of the companies I'm involved in have asked the employees to take like a 10% kind of wage reduction. But the executives have taken much, much more, as typically much as 10. But that's the only way that I would suggest you top slice. Everything else you should do is kind of invest in areas where you know it's short-term and long-term strategic and actually stop a lot of things that are marginal. So it's almost like this concept of sort of business planning, if it makes sense, sort of zero-based. And it's a concept where you almost think clean sheet of paper. It's a great thing to do this, actually. Even if you've been running a company for 10 years, it's a great thing to think that you've been appointed as the new chief executive day one. What would you do? Where's all the bodies buried? What's working? What's not working? And take a really dispassionate, objective view of both with an eye on the present and the future and stop anything marginal. Anything that's kind of non-critical activity that invariably gets created because, you know, people like to be busy. It's just human nature. Maybe that is stopping product lines. Maybe it's, you know, stopping geographies. And then you will find how you become stronger when you emerge from this. You actually make fewer bets, but the bets have got a far greater probability of paying off. And you have much more wood. You have all the wood behind fewer arrows. So that's a way that you can really think dispassionately as part of your reset plan. Can I free up extra cash for investment and double down in certain areas? But it can't be all things to all people. And these times call out for you to do very few things exceptionally well. And that's what I'd advise you to do.
Yeah, I think that's great advice.
Just one more thing I wanted to ask you, Stephen. You mentioned there the future. And I think sometimes when we have catastrophic things happen in business, we can look to a future and we already know a little bit what it's going to look like and we can plan for it. But in these times, it feels like there's going to be a totally new normal that comes off the back of this. And I just wondered what your perspective is on that. Do you think that normal is going to look very different in a business landscape after this? And what do you think the lasting impact might be?
Flick, it's great. My experience suggests that life, you know, this pendulum we're on, it doesn't swing to the extreme. So when normality resumes and a vaccine's found and all that, you know, reality is we won't all be in lockdown, we won't all work from home. However, there will be seismic change. You know, I've characterized what would have happened in probably a decade or two decades around the death of the traditional high street, and this massive shift to online, the impact of social media. I think there's a few, I'd paint a picture where I think there could be some massive benefits coming out of this crisis and almost unintended consequences. If I look at one thing, I think we're all passionate about is greater equality. I think historically, well, I know, there's this sort of alpha male mentality around working from home. And, you know, I've even heard it called shirking from home. You know, let's be honest about it. And I think that's changed forever because I think people are realizing, leaders are realizing, you can be massively productive wherever you are. And therefore, there's going to be a huge acceleration in flexible employment. And it will become the new norm. Now, I think the reason why that's really good, Flick, is I think the care and responsibility in most families obviously is the woman. Less than a third, I think, of families, the man takes sort of primary care and role. Now, with a much more flexible workforce where working from home is acknowledged and trusted, it allows the conversations to happen about what's the best parenting relationship, care and relationship for bringing up a family. And I think that will really accelerate the whole equality debate. And it's interesting, a couple of perspectives really. One is, I think we're moving into a world where there's much greater trust. And I think what we've seen, to your point, Brendan, is chief executives, leaders, most leaders, become much more trusted because they're hunkering down, they're in the trenches, they're taking the pain, they're being very compassionate and considerate. But I think now we'll see employees trusted a lot more because where you, whether you work from home or not, it's all about the outputs and the quality. It's not about just showing up in the office and being there at 7 in the morning and leaving at 9 at night.
Yeah,
that's a distant world. The other thing that's really historical perspective is probably the most accelerated equality has come after massive crises. So in the First World War, it was the first time really that women built the case up to work and they were working in factories. And that was one of the factors that allowed women to get the votes in, you know, after the First World War. And then Second World War, again, you know, women working in agriculture, working in the factories, really became much more normal for women to be in the workplace. So out of these terrible crises, historically, there's been a real major revolution around equality. And I think that similarly will be one of the factors that comes out of this corona crisis where people are working from home. So a couple of things is, I do think the new norm will be a much more balanced trust and relationship, be based on output. And it won't be about showing up. It will be about what you deliver and the value. And I think that could have an unintended consequence whereby it will really accelerate genuine equality, both in the workplace and in the care and relationship for families. And I think that's hugely positive.
And I think that is a great point to end our discussion on, in the sense that I think that's a really positive way to kind of wrap things up and just kind of and I've really like enjoyed this discussion, and just I think there's been so many great bits of advice that you've shared, Stephen, in terms of you know, what business leaders should be doing, but also just some really fantastic observations in terms of, you know, the compassion we're seeing, the changes in attitudes towards equality. So just it, all round, it's been a fantastic conversation. So I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
No, I love it. And if there's just a couple of things to leave with, obviously you know, hopefully, if you don't know me, if you know me, you know what I'm like. I'm very informal. If you want to follow me on social media, it's just S. Kelly, CEO. If I can help your businesses out there, then very happy to do it. I've been on loads of business calls with CEOs in the last 6 weeks, making sure they got plans for survival. Kind of probably three kind of messages just to leave you with is for your own business, I'm sure you've already got a reset plan and a plan for success. And the best thing you can do is, you know, we used to use this phrase in government, JDI, just do it, just do it. So with, especially in these times, you know, I've always said this, A-class strategy with B-class execution is always inferior to B-class strategy and A-class execution. This is the time where you need to be action in your strategies better than ever. You need to be the best leader you can be, and you need to communicate that just at an unbelievable level. Communication is so powerful. And then the second thing probably is, you know, this is a time for customer obsession like we've never known it before, more than ever. Because if you're really compassionate, considerate, and supportive of your customers, they will, their memories will outlast this crisis, and you'll have customers for life, which is a fantastic bedrock of a great business.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stephen. That's fantastic. And I'd say I would, look up Stephen on LinkedIn and on Twitter, because I think there's, you know, lots more great content and thoughts that Stephen's been sharing. And then we'll be making this episode available as a podcast for, you know, you can share with friends and contacts. And then next Friday, we have our next episode, which is going to be on the subject of, is this the end of money as we know it? Where we're going to be speaking with Andy Bryant, who is the COO of one of the world's largest Bitcoin exchange based on trading volume. So that's going to be another really interesting discussion. So thank you again, Stephen and Flick, for joining us on this conversation. And thanks to our audience for joining us as well.
Be safe, everybody. Keep well.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Stephen, stay
safe. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye there. Bye. Thanks, Flick. Thanks, Brendan.